You may know him as Mango, Mr. Peepers, or one half of the head-bopping brothers in A Night at the Roxbury. Chris Kattan has created some of the most memorable characters in the very long history of NBC's Saturday Night Live. Not long after Chris was labeled one of the improv group Groundlings must-see performers in the company, he was cast on SNL, and within the first 6 weeks, his film career took off as well. Now, for the first time, Kattan opens up about his 8 seasons on SNL, performing alongside Will Ferrell, Jimmy Fallon, and Tina Fey, just to name a few. His memoir, Baby, Don't Hurt Me, offers a look into his life, from his relationship with Lorne Michaels to breaking his neck on live television. Again, the name of the book is Baby, Don't Hurt Me, and it's a pleasure to welcome Chris Kattan to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. Very nice to have you on the program.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
So give us a sense of at what point did you think, okay, this is a story that I would like to tell, this is a story I would like to share, this is a story that I think people should know?
It was probably about 5 years ago that I had a few friends, a number of friends tell me that, you know, you should write a book, friends that knew me well enough to say that because they knew a lot about my past and a lot of the stories and experiences I've had, and that I had a lot to tell. You know, also, you know, I've been absent from the public eye a little bit in the last, 20 years, I guess, maybe, or 18 years. And I had a lot of reasons, I had a few reasons to tell as to why that was happening. And anyway, I had a lot of good reasons to tell the story and to write a book.
So the basic reason and how you sum it up, I mean, you take a whole book to explain this, but for the absence, this was not of your own making, obviously. This is not something you chose to do. What do you look at the key reason for being out of the public eye?
I had an injury on SNL, you know, and there are 5 surgeries that followed due to that injury. And that took up a lot of time. For those who know about surgeries and the cost of living that it can do, you know, it really, you know, causes for you to be bedridden and for you to heal and go through physical therapy and post-op and learn how to walk again and things like that, you know, things that you don't really want to be seen doing, you know, things that are quite embarrassing if you're to do them in public. And those are the main reasons. That is the main reason, rather.
What happened on set that caused the accident?
Well, I don't want to get too detailed because it's in the book. But you know, it was during a sketch, and there was a chair that I threw myself backwards in order to sell the joke, and the top ridge of the chair was what my neck snapped on, and as I fell backwards, and that's what caused me to get atrophy on my left arm. And that atrophy later, when I went to the doctor, said that you broke your neck, and that's why you're getting atrophy on your left arm, and numbness on your fingers and in your toes, and that's what happened, basically. It was an accident on live television, on Saturday Night Live.
So it is not something that you knew about right away. It's not something that the show knew about right away.
No, not right away, no. Did not know. No, I thought it was something very painful that would go away. And you're so pumped up with adrenaline, too, in the show. You're not going to, you know, buy into the pain, too. And, you know, I've been hurt before, but nothing like that. But so I've... I'm used to just, you know, just go with it and just live with it and live with the pain and just keep going, you know. That's what I did.
You say, well, this happened in 2001, and you first mentioned it, I guess, a couple of years ago of saying that there was an injury, but you make the point, obviously, that you still suffer from the effects of that injury.
Yes, but not as nearly as I used to, obviously. You know, there are certain things I can't do. You know, I mean, I can't, like, change a light bulb over my head, and my hands are not quite the same. They can't – I'll tend to drop things every so often. you know, I'm probably 90% better. I'm not 100% better, but, you know, I'm almost 100% better. But, you know, I don't think I'll ever be 100% the best, you know, the same as I was.
Yeah. When the book first came out, there were a lot of denials from NBC, from Lorne Michaels, from Saturday Night Live. What do you make of that, of their sort of distancing from that particular incident?
Well, at first I was like really surprised, because you know it was pretty obvious that it happened when it happened. But then, you know, I realized that, you know, for legal reasons, I'm sure that that's what they need to say. And I understand that. But, you know, I also don't want to do anything legally. You know, I don't want to sue them. This is not supposed to be something that they're at fault for, because they're not. I'm at fault for it. It was my own decision to do this and, you know, to throw myself back. You know, nobody told me to do it. I was the one who chose to do it. So they're not at fault. But, you know, I can understand that they would have to say that, you know, legally. So it makes sense.
In that time, since the accident and since leaving the show, what has your relationship been with Saturday Night Live? I mean, the thing that made headlines, of course, is that you were not a part of the 40th anniversary. Is that because you were not up to it physically or because you were not invited?
No, I was invited. I was there. I just was not, physically I was fine to do it. I don't know why I wasn't asked to do any sketches or anything. There was no reason for it, you know. I have no idea. It was just kind of felt like a bummer when I was there. But I was definitely a part of that night. I mean, I just wasn't on television,
right?
You know,
front and center.
You didn't have me appear in any. Yeah, exactly. I wasn't a part of that evening.
I mean, you write in the book about these friendships, these close relationships that you have, and how many of those have you ultimately been able to maintain over the years?
Oh, most of them. You know, well, if in regards to SNL, the friends that I had in the cast have always remained friends. You know, they're still great friends. You know. Whether it's Maya or Fred or Jimmy or Seth or Will, or, you know, they're all still close friends. You know, there were the relationships that I was referring to in the book are relationships, meaning like love relationships, girlfriend relationships.
Well, sure.
Those things were affected too, those kind of relationships.
And
they were, you know, they took a toll a little bit because, you know, it's hard when you're going through post-op and stuff, it's difficult to ask your girlfriend to, you know, bathe you when you're not able to do it yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Those kind of things are not, it's kind of humiliating to do so.
And there were, again, this is from the book and headlines, but you were, and then there was an addiction issue as well.
Yes, there was. That was for a couple of years after my last surgery. I'm clean now and I'm sober and it was, you know, quite a few years ago. But, there was a time when that was happening briefly, too, as well. And, you know, as you know, all right, maybe you don't know, but for those who go through back surgery or neck surgery, you do have to take, you know, be on morphine in the hospital. And when you come out of the hospital and you go home and you're still healing, you're bedridden, you still need to take, you know, painkillers in order to sustain, you know, not being in pain, you know, until you come off of it, and then you're okay. It's not a fun experience, you know, but it is required to take those painkillers after surgery. It's such an intensive surgery as well.
How do you look back now, given what has happened to you, given what you've been through? How do you look back now, and I guess another way of asking it is, do you look at it differently of those 8 seasons of what you accomplished on that program?
How do I look back at it differently?
Or do you look back at it differently?
You know, I look back at it probably much more fondly than I ever have, honestly. Because, you know, while I was in it, it's a lot more stressful to be on the show while you're in it, you know, cause you have to write, you have to create and you have to try to, try to get your sketches on for the weekend, so you show up in the show. Although Lauren took care of me, so I didn't have to fight too much. But you know, you still have to work very hard. I mean, your life is SNL while you're on SNL. You know, it's very hard to have a life outside of that. Although people have been able to do that and have a life outside of it, but for me, I had that brain that just needed to concentrate on one thing in order to accomplish what I dreamt of, and that was SNL. So that's what I was doing at the time. So that's all I focused on. And when I look back on it, you know, I have some wonderful fond memories of it, and pretty much that's it. I don't remember the stress, and I don't remember the work that I did. I just remember the results and the memories of the sketches and the friendships, you know, that I got out of that show, you know, and that's what I remember the most. So all my memories are very, I have wonderful memories out of coming out of that show mostly.
As a comedian and as an improv performer, it seems to me that there isn't a better place for someone like yourself to be than in a show like that, which is evidenced by the fact that you were there for 8 seasons, which by all accounts is a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was a dream come true at the time. You know, that was what I wanted to do from high school. I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. And so I joined the Groundlings, this West Coast improv group. I didn't know any, had I known, my father was in the Groundlings. He was one of the founders of the Groundlings back in like 1976. And I saw my dad perform on that stage when I was 7 years old. And that's what really gave birth to the whole idea of my love for improv and character work and sketch comedy, you know. And he's really responsible for me wanting to be on Saturday Night Live in the first place, you know. You know, it was pretty amazing to get to see my dad on stage. That's one thing. But getting to see also Paul Rubens create Pee Wee Herman on the same stage was really pretty outstanding. You know, that was pretty amazing. And I didn't just get to see the result, you know, the character itself. I got to see the performer and their process of making that character come alive. And that was really magical to see, you know, as a kid. It really was.
You write about, of course, and this has another headline from the book, but you write about your experience in making the film A Night at the Roxbury and what happened with you and Lorne Michaels. Without giving away most of what you write about in the book, but give us an idea of what happened there and what went wrong.
Well, what went wrong was that I don't know if anything went terribly wrong, but what happened was I had an affair with Amy Heckerling during the shooting of Night at Roxbury.
The director.
The director, correct.
Yes.
And, you know, and I don't know if that may or may not have been the best idea. I was very green at the time. And, you know, and Lauren did not pressure me to sleep with Amy Heckerling, although the tabloid seemed to be saying that. But, you know, that's not true. But, you know, it wasn't necessarily something that went wrong. It's more something that happened, you know, really in the book. It wasn't, it was an experience that happened. And, you know, I was so impressed by Amy and, you know, I fell for her. And, you know, we had an affair and it was an experience, you know. And, but I chose to keep it a secret because I felt like it wasn't, I don't know if it was something that would, you know, was necessarily acceptable to sleep with the director of a movie that you're in. You know, I was very young and I didn't know if that was something that was acceptable. So, you know, and I write about it, but I don't really claim that really something went wrong about it, you know.
What impact did it have on the filming? What impact did it have on your relationship with Will Ferrell?
Well, temporarily, it impacted my friendship a little bit with Will, but we became friends shortly after that. We mended our wounds shortly after that, So it did. I don't know how it affected the film itself. I have no idea. But it made for, I don't know. We still had a great time doing the film, and there's nothing but great memories about it. The filming itself, but, I don't know. I think it didn't make for anything bad about the film at all.
When you, now that you've written this and you're feeling better, what do you look at as where you would like your career to go next?
I am doing a lot of stand-up comedy right now, and I have a few projects in the work as well. So I'm very happy where I'm at right now. I hope to work with the other cast members, like other cast members do, and work with Lorne and Will and then everybody else. I think it was a very happy cast, and they remain to be happy people. And I was very fortunate to be part of it. I'm enjoying my life.
Well, the name of the book is Baby Don't Hurt Me. It's Chris Kattan's memoir. It's published by Benbella Books. Chris, thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Baby Don't Hurt Me. It's published by Benbella Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.